Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Play ball, we think.
Play ball if everything goes okay. Look, at least there's a plan, and there are real plans for teams to go to actual camps. And I, last thing I did before I went to bed was read through a good chunk of the 101-page operations manual for how this is going to get done. And it's a good plan, but everyone's got to follow it, and everyone's got to be super careful that they don't come across the wrong person in the communities that they're at. And that may be the biggest challenge of all, because, you know, in places like Florida and Texas, and, you know, lesser case, but Arizona, that's going to be tough, because it's pretty rampant in those places.
Well, and there are Philadelphia Phillies testing positive. There's a Blue Jays member of the Blue Jays personnel is tested positive, and they've shut down the Dunedin facility shy for a complete and total sanitization. Like, we're just not sure. The question, though, is with the border closure, and therefore Toronto likely not being available to the Blue Jays, and the situation in Florida, what do the Blue Jays do when they report to camp next week? Is it Dunedin? Are they looking at other options? Is Buffalo, for example, just thrown in a place out there in consideration? What does that look like to your understanding?
Well, many text conversations last night, well, best I could come up with is, as of right now, it's still Dunedin. That's still the plan. It's still the most likely outcome. Toronto right now isn't likely. The Blue Jays still are hoping to have their home games in Toronto, and there's some steps that need to be taken on that front, and we can talk about those in a bit. They've kicked around the idea of sharing the trop. Logistically, it's probably just not going to work. To have two teams running spring trainings at one facility, it may not even be enough for one team, considering that clubs are going to be able to carry 60 players into each camp. So I think the way things stand, Dunedin is the most likely spot. Buffalo is, a good idea in theory. But from what I understand, they've been shut down for quite a bit right now. And, I'm not even sure if they'd have the personnel around to quickly restart and do all the things that you need to do to have the facility ready to go.
And at some point, I'm digging just a little too deep here, but the weather in Florida in July is not the same as the weather in Florida in March. Do you have any sense of what a day would look like? Are they going to have to maybe file in at 2 or 3 in the afternoon for indoor work? And then if you're playing a spring training game, are there going to be spring training games? And if there are, would they would have to be in the evening when it's presumably 90 Fahrenheit instead of 110?
Yeah, well, I mean, there are going to be games, but if most teams are going to be training at their home stadiums, which is the plan, the instruction, there's going to be really one club in the area, and that would be the Tampa Bay Rays. So, they could go over to the Trop and play indoors, and that would certainly make things a little bit easier. But the communications I had with, a handful of people around the team, they aren't even sure where to go. They're trying to pack up their families and trying to pack up their things and, figure out how they're going to get to where they're going to book their flights to. And none of that or all of that is in the air right now. So Blue Jays have a lot of work in a short amount of time to get done.
Shai Davidi is Sportsnet's Blue Jays and MLB insider. This is Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Question around most of the leagues right now is what happens when players do get COVID, and I think the NBA and NHL are going to approach it differently. And you can see now with MLB, it's looking like a 10 days you're going to kind of go on the IR and go from there. Is there any more information, I guess, on what the league actually wants to do and how long they should keep players out for if they do contract COVID?
Well, they're actually going to create, and I was reading through this a little bit last night, they're going to create what's essentially like a COVID-19 specific injured list. And there's no minimum time on that. There's no maximum time on that. And you don't have to necessarily test positive for it, but a player who, you know, comes across a confirmed carrier of the coronavirus can be placed on that COVID injured list. And, you know, somebody who's showing symptoms and needs to self-isolate while they're being further evaluated can go on that injured list. So, you know, I think from a, you know, roster mechanics standpoint, that's one way to mitigate it. And then it all comes down to, you know, how effective your contact tracing is from that point forward. And, you know, the Blue Jays and the Phillies and the San Francisco Giants got some experience with that in the past few days, Colorado Rockies as well, in terms of, you know, having cases at either their facilities or their home stadiums and running through that contact tracing process and trying to minimize any spread from that point forward. And they'll be able to share best practices with other teams. And so, you know, is it going to work? I mean, we just don't know, right? You know, I think that the reality, it's a sad reality, but if whatever sport that you're in, whatever, and really whatever line of work that you're in, if you're coming back to a place of business, you're going to have to live with some amount of infection. It's just going to happen because it's in the community, whether we like it or not. So, you know, that's something that everybody who decides to play in this season is going to be signing up for and accepting the risks of.
Shai, when you look at the last couple of months, and you've written some very insightful pieces on this on sportsnet.ca, will we look back on this with some disdain, the ongoing petulant negotiations between the league and the players, or using local baseball fans as an example, are the Blue Jays 1-8-game winning streak in this shortened season away from us forgetting all about it?
Well, I mean, history tells you that once the game gets back on and, you know, we're not talking about labor constantly and you've got the actual product, the people in general come back. And that's one of the reasons why the sports leagues continue to go down these roads and have these type of public battles, because people just ultimately return. And, you know, is this time different? Was, you know, the revulsion level because of the upheaval in society and everybody's everyday lives is so high right now that, you know, this fight became all the more abhorrent in a lot of ways? Maybe, but, you know, the trend, the pattern has been that the people always return. And, you know, unfortunately, the sports leagues do take that for granted. And, you know, the owners do try to use that as a way to extract concessions from players in various negotiations. You know, that happened here, even though there was an agreed upon framework for the pandemic. You know, there was a roadmap that both sides had to follow. And, you know, the owners tried to rip that up, essentially, and reset everything. Players had to hold firm, and they did. And that's why the past 2 months played out the way that they did. So I think ultimately, you know, it's a couple eight-game winning streaks. Maybe not even eight-game winning streaks. Just a couple weeks of good games. And I think most fans would be back on board.
Do you think, and Trevor Bauer, the Cincinnati Reds pitcher, former Cleveland pitcher, tweeted this: we gave up shares of playoff money, eliminated the qualifying offer for 2021, paycheck advance forgiveness, COVID-19 protections, and protection for non-guaranteed arbitration contracts for next year. Give up rights to all of that in order to hold out for our right to file a grievance on this shortened season. Do you think he is speaking for a reasonable swath of the players' union, or is Bauer rogue like he is sometimes wont to be?
I think that there's a portion of players that are asking themselves, all this for what? And not just players. I think there's some people on the management side too that are asking the same questions. All this for what? But you know, it's funny that the common sense viewpoint of this is very different from the, you know, the legal collective bargaining agreement standpoint of this. And that, you know, from that standpoint, you know, you could look at it from a player's perspective and say, we repulsed an attempt from the owners to extract salary concessions from us and from their attempt to escape a binding agreement. And that was more important than those potential gets. And at the other view, and then the other point is that, you know, what the players were going to get in return for surrendering playoffs wasn't commensurate value. And because there's a collective bargaining agreement coming up, any give that you get, you have to secure commensurate value in return. And so, you know, they didn't create any facts on the ground. And so maybe they take a little bit less now with an eye towards collecting more down the road. And so, you know, it's from a common sense viewpoint, I think you can certainly look at it the way Trevor Bauer does and other players do as well and say, what did we do here? But on the flip side, you know, there's the aspect of it from a collective bargaining lens. And, you know, I had one player say to me, I'm fine with the way this went because I don't want to give the owners anything without getting enough back. And, you know, that's exactly what the players did.